Welcome to the NCSoft podcast. NCSoft is the world's premier publisher of MMO games. City of Heroes is rated T for teen by the ESRB. This podcast is copyright 2009 NC Interactive Incorporated. This City of Heroes podcast is the panel Walking the Tightrope, Archetypes and Power Balancing from HeroCon 2009.
All right, everyone. It's close enough to time, so I guess we'll go ahead and get started. My name is Jonathan Kearney. I'm the moderator, and I'm just going to start by saying thank you to everyone for coming. It's great to have a turnout like this, and it's like we really enjoy coming out to panels like this and talking about what we like to do with, you know, the people we're doing it for. So anyway, moving on, we got a couple panel members here. Floyd Grubb, Castle, you all know him. Yep. Okay. Andy Maurer, you might have seen him before. He's been on a few more panels. He's a programmer. He works with us a lot. And Phil Synapse Zaleski. You all know Synapse. Doing a lot of work on the badges and stuff like this. And well, we got a lot of topics we're going to cover. First off, we're going to talk a little about balancing, doing the rebalancing for blasters, stalkers, and dominators. And then, we'll talk a little about designing a major feature. I'll probably talk about working on the tarot power or powers customization. I did some work on that. Phil did a lot of work on a number of power sets. He'll talk about designing a power set and also working on the clockwork and maybe proliferating power sets if there's time. Andy will talk a little about doing bugs and handling bugs, some of the things that comes up, and a little about optimizing. Floyd will talk a little about the growth of the powers team and how it's changed since he's been here, and then the two of us will come on, and also we have a new guy, Tim Sweeney. I don't know if he's around, but stand up, Tim. All right, Tim. Good new guy. Like, he may be on the forums eventually. We'll put a target on him at some point. All right. Okay, so I'm go ahead and move on to talking about AT balancing. Starting off with blasters, we did this 2 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, a while back. We started off looking at a lot of options, but I guess actually, Floyd, do you want to talk about how you went through that process?
Sure. Wow, that's tough. So basically with blasters, what we did, many of you were here last year. You've probably heard parts of this story before. With blasters, we decided that they had been underperforming, and we basically tried to figure out what it was that players were doing that caused the things not to work out the way that we had originally anticipated. And really turned out that it wasn't anything that the players themselves were doing at all. It was the design of the original Defiance power. To surprise of no one in the room, was it led to riskier behavior than really was warranted. You players would want to get their lives to a low point so they get more of a damage bonus, which led to them falling over the cliff and dying. So we decided to take a step back and redesign the Defiance power and come up with a better methodology for getting the damage bonus into the player's hands without having them to do such weird gymnastics as jumping off the top of a building to get to one health so they can do their nuke. We went through a number of iterations. I think all told, we went through four different designs before we decided on the one that we eventually went with. The oddest one was a situation where blasters could not die until they ran out of defiance. So you had a separate defiance bar that built up as you did your attacks. And no matter what your hit points were, you'd be at negative 500 hit points. You'd still be alive as long as you had any defiance left. And that was really fun, but it led to some very strange bugs. So we didn't go with that one. But overall, it was a very lengthy process, and we spent a lot of time trying different things before we eventually put something out. So I think all told, it was about a year and a half in the making of what you guys finally ended up with. So it takes a little bit of time.
And then we did a work on Stalkers. I'll go ahead and start off there. That was an interesting design process. There'd been a lot of feedback on what people liked about Stalkers over the years and things that they wanted to be see improved. And we got some really interesting feedback in the process. One of the things we liked from the players was they said they wanted to see like an AOE effect on the Assassin Strike. And so we actually took that, and then we went, I believe we opted for going with a fear effect that got placed on the effect. So when you Assassin Strike somebody, you get a big AOE fear, and everybody, all the mobs around them start, you know, trembling in fear, and it worked really nicely for groups. And the other thing we wanted to do was improve how Stalkers worked in groups. And one of the interesting feedback things we got was the idea of using criticals as a way of increasing the damage on Stalkers. And at that point, what we did was we went, okay, well, we want to make it better for for them to group. So we gave them a base critical rate that scaled up the more players you had nearby. And so now I think it's a 10% plus, I think, a 3% bonus for every team member in range. And so you're actually looking at getting a 30% critical bonus when you're in a full group, which is pretty hefty. And I think there was a small damage bonus there as well. And
both of those ideas were came from player feedback during the testing process. So, you know, the final way that Stalkers came out is definitely because you guys give good feedback to us while we're doing all this stuff. So
there was a ton of player feedback, like Floyd was saying, that we got to put this together. So we had dozens and dozens of issues that were both very real and perceived for that archetype, compiled them, and figured out how can we address these. Do these actually need to be addressed? And we looked at player solutions and some of our solutions, and we stacked them up and see how many of these problems can we solve. And some of the ideas that we came up with and just weren't going to work, so they're kind of crazy. Didn't stop us from trying them and testing them out.
How annoying does it?
But the end result is what you see, where Stalkers now have a scaling critical hit chance that scales with the size of a team. They also got a bonus to their damage to their base archetype damage, and the demoralize effect they have on their after they land an Assassin Strike.
So. Yep. The other issue we're going to talk about there was the Dominators and the Dominator revamp, and that was a personal favorite of mine. I'm a fan of Dominators, so.
Yeah.
They're a fun class. I like them a lot. So, the main problem with Dominators was the Jekyll and Hyde feeling. Below 20, you didn't have access to SO level enhancements, and you had problems actually keeping, you know, domination up regularly, which meant you were doing less damage because you didn't have the SO level damage enhancers, and you didn't have your domination up as well. So it was very tough slog 1 to 20. Once you got past that, it was okay, but we found that a lot of players didn't necessarily like the feeling of, you know, okay, you're playing 1-6, you're going, I'm playing my Dominator and I'm playing my Brute. I know which one's more smash-tastic here. What we focused on with that was, okay, how can we make domination still a good power that you'd want to use, and yet remove the actual Jekyll and Hyde feeling and make it feel like a better all-around character. And there was a couple of ways we did that. We actually increased the damage of a lot of Dominator powers. There were a lot of melee powers and stuff like this that we actually increased the recharge on, which also increases the way our system works. That also increases the damage of the power as well. And also, we increased the base damage. We got rid of the actual damage bonus in Domination, but you still get all the control effects, the endurance bonus, and, you know, the endurance and recovery bonus, and all the status protection. But your damage is now built into your base damage, so you get you do more damage with your powers, even though you don't necessarily get the bonus in Domination. We found that it still played out well because Domination is still really useful if you're going up against something with status protection, and it seemed to work really well.
Yeah, to talk a little bit about the process behind this, it really ended up being something that we wanted to do. And when Jonathan came on, he really brought in a lot more enthusiasm for you know, finally getting started on doing a Dominator revamp. And we went back and forth and finally got the approval on okay, go ahead and make some changes. That was an interesting time because we didn't really have a set idea of what we wanted to do other than we wanted to try to eliminate the Jekyll and Hyde feeling. And that led to a lot of discussion, argument, raised voices, yelling, lots of math flying back and forth. It was fun.
Only some blood.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. But it you know, it took us, 6 months of arguing before we finally got to a point where we had an actual consensus of what we wanted to try. And then we you know, put that up and promptly, you know, got a lot of feedback that, yeah, this isn't quite what right, or that isn't quite right, or these numbers aren't quite right, and this isn't fun, and you know, a lot of that sort of thing. And so we adjusted some things, and I think that what we finally ended up going live with was actually one of our better revamps. It I think it came out really well.
All right. So now we're going to move on to a couple of those things. Phil, do you want to go ahead and talk about like setting up a power set there? Or
also talk about actually one of the things we do as power designers is we design with in conjunction with the mission designers and world designers, we design villain groups. And the process for that is really fun. I think it's one of the things I enjoy the most is making encounters. Like I helped design the Reichsman encounter. And that was one of the most fun things I've done working here. The typical process is there's a need by world and mission design. And we meet with them. They come up with an idea. It's a crazy idea, a crazy list of powers they like to see these guys doing. And we try to come up with a solution for their need. And it usually works out pretty well. So typically what happens is that we brainstorm with the mission and world designers, and we come up with a list of things we can actually do that won't break the game. And then a design doc is created, highlighting kind of the goals and shticks of these groups. So an example of a shtick that you might see in like Sky Raiders is, oh my god, take out the engineer first. He's going to summon the force field drone, which is going to make it harder to defeat that group. And also kind of design what the flow of combat fighting these guys might be at different level ranges. And ideally, what's going to happen is the experience fighting the group, say like Longbow is a good example, they get more challenging as they level, as you level up fighting them, but you're essentially fighting the same guys. They just get more power put into their pools. Then we play test it, see how crazy it is. It actually is going to work or not. Players are going to hate it, or they're going to love it. Is it a good challenge? Is it too easy? So we retool that to a point to where you guys like it. So your feedback on the forums is invaluable for that. The next is it's put onto the, you know, it's beta tested. Then after that gets beta tested, it goes to live. During that process, though, we work a lot with art, and they create both the animations and the PFX, that's the visual effects for the powers that the enemies are using. And Jay and Cheryl, they make the actual model. The tricky part is matching up the models with the need of the enemy. So, for example, the Seers were kind of tricky because some of them are bound. They're in a kind of a psychic straitjacket. So they can't lift their hand to do their psychic powers. They have to use their head. But just moving their head forward is kind of boring. So specific rigs had to be created for these entities that would allow for an interesting amount of motion animation. That's pretty much what it takes to create a villain group. It's a long process that goes back and forth between all three departments to make that a reality. So,
yeah, to go back to the Reichsman encounter a little bit. Reichsman encounter is actually one of those fun things where the initial design doc came in and said, you know, this is what we want for the encounter, and we went through and we built it, and we built Reichsman to the spec that was designed, And we went through and we play tested and went, wow, you know, this is kind of dry. This isn't all that great. So I went back to the mission designers and said, you know, this is basically, you know, it needs something else. And so we started brainstorming and going back and forth and coming up with different things that could be done to beef up the encounter. And that's where the whole consoles of Doom, we have to have the stalker sneak in and click the console to destroy all the fifth column, and the multiple waves of ambushes. That's where all that came from. It's a very lengthy back and forth between the guys who are playtesting it, you the players, and the design team. It was a very fun process. I'm rather proud of how that one came out.
So what happened to Hero Side
on that one? Well, the initial playtest on the Hero Side, basically, we accomplished the goals of what we wanted, and the villain side really just needed more work, and we had enough time to really put a lot of work into one or the other. We opted to spend most of our time working on the villain side to make sure that it was really really tight, and the Hero Side is, you know, it's acceptable. It could be better. But it's, you know, it's acceptable. Not our best work, but, you know, not our worst by far.
Okay, so.
The next thing I want to talk about a little bit is the making of actual player power set. It's a little bit different. And I was going to use dual pistols as an example. That was a power set that I designed. So the process of this power set was like, what do we want with this? What's the style that we want to go for this? Do we want to go kind of the gunslinger cowboy thing? Do we want to go gun-fu? I mean, there's equilibrium. How do we want to do that?
John.
And man, I was all about the gun-fu. And that was my vote, which is just one, right? And then we got animator Nelson Tam, and we started talking about how do you want this to work. And his vote was definitely gun-fu. And man, he ran with it, and it's beautiful. I'm very happy with how that turned out. So when you make a new power set, you want to do something new and interesting in every single power set. And the new and special thing about this set is that it has power called swap ammo. And I can't go into too many specifics, but swap ammo does allow you to change the secondary effect on your powers. So there's four types of ammo. Standard, which is just like lethal rounds, you're gonna do primarily lethal damage. You have cryo rounds, which does a little bit of extra cold damage and slows enemies. Then you have incendiary rounds, which causes a fire dot damage over time effect. And then you have chemical rounds, which reduce the target's damage. That's the current design. And so the really different thing about this is you're shifting a secondary portion of your damage. Right now it's 30% of your damage to a different type of damage. So it's pretty flexible. You run into against an enemy who's really strong against lethal, you know, you can change out to a different type of ammo. You're fighting a creature that has really high fire resistance, you swap out to cryo. So that's kind of the idea.
So how easy was that to build?
I think I recruited the help of programmers, both these guys, and there's a simple solution to making that swap ammo power. I didn't go that way. I'm glad I didn't, but hopefully you guys like it. So when going with building this power set, we kind of figure out, okay, is there any other power set that's going to be like? Is there any other blast that it's going to be like? And I thought, well, no. I do want to have a tier 9 nuke. That's important. But the endurance draining nuke, I kind of want to move away from that for this and go into more like a full auto rain of arrows kind of thing. So you'll see a power like that. You saw it twice. In that video, you guys can guess which one that was. yeah, so there's a lot of area effect, and that was one of the shticks of this power is there is a lot of area effect, which is kind of tricky. If you think of shooting pistols, how do you hit multiple targets at once with pistols? But there you go. Very creative animation was the answer to that. So I'm very, very happy with how that power set turned out. I can't wait for you guys to play it. It's going to be great. So the next thing I'll talk about real quick is power set proliferation. So there's a bunch of power sets you guys want. Some don't work so well with other archetypes. For example, like Ice Melee and Spines on a Brute, while it might be very cool, it's going to kind of work against that archetype's inherent power. So you're slowing an enemy down, making them less likely to attack you. Therefore, they're not going to make it as many attacks on you, reducing the amount of fury you build up. And same thing with like ice armor for brutes. So we look at that's something we eventually are going to have to tackle. We're going to have to figure out a way to deal with that. But so we look at power sets. That what can we do right now with minimal amount of animation and effects time, so that we can so that the artist can focus on the next big important thing, and we can get this out, get more content, more. Power sets more options to you guys. So that's what we did. We came with a list of what we could do and kind of marked off, let's not do these right now. Ooh, these options just scare us for like, you know, like kinetics for masterminds. And then, for example, there's some choices that had to be made that were like, we're both kind of like, I don't know which one we want to do. And it literally came down to a die roll. Odds we do this power set, even if we do this one. Yeah.
Isn't that thermal, I think?
It was thermal. Yeah. That's where thermal from
Mastermind.
Yeah, high-tech decision-making there.
What do you do when there's two good options?
And another thing we did this year was taking a look at epic power pools. There were some pitfalls that occurred when we were looking at that. Instead of adding in a fifth power, we swapped one out for one that we thought would be more powerful or more popular. And
Didn't work well at all.
That didn't make people happy. So what we decided to do was to go, okay, well, let's scramble and let's get a fifth power in that set and make it a second level 41 option, or 44, right?
I don't even remember at this point.
Yeah, it was 44. So, yeah. Actually, the way that worked out was around about beginning a closed beta, I was reading the initial feedback and going, this is not looking good. The idea was we wanted to put a power in there that was really good, so good that, okay, you'd maybe be losing a power, but you'd be getting something that was far better than what you'd be getting. Not so good in theory. See, there's always you know, someone out there who really likes what they're playing. And that's cool. That's why they play this game. They like what they're playing. So when we go in there and monkey around with power sets like this, doesn't work out well. And so I realized early in closed beta that no, we needed to add in a fifth power. And I went through and found a way to do it, but I had to get through the approval process to actually get the permission to set this up.
And what he means by that is me saying no.
Yeah, him saying no. The producer's saying, you want to do what? No.
And, how much time?
Yeah. Matt Miller going, he should have designed it right in the first place. He never said that, but you know. But he did say that, but yeah.
That's one thing we'll talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But, yeah, save that for a question for later. But yeah. But in any case, so yes, we had to go through the approval process, and I finally got approval. And the sad part is, I think I put in all of those, adjusted all those, I think there was probably about 30, 40 different epic pools, and put those all in about 3 days. And it was a miracle that there were not more bugs than there were in the system. But yeah, Phil, I did the initial round, and then Phil went ahead and did the next round, which was...
Yeah, you finished it up.
Yeah, so the... And kind of to answer the gentleman in the back here who's asking, one of the things we did in issue 16 was we gave scrappers a new epic power set. And that's kind of weird. We don't normally just give out, here's some candy, but they're the only archetype that had three. So that kind of sucks. So we made them have at least the minimum amount of epics that all the other archetypes have. One of the reasons we haven't really gone into making new patron pools is because that is a ton of art time, a ton of story time, because the way you get your patron powers is by completing the patron arc. While we could just jam in some extra sub-patrons like Ice Mistral and whatnot, that'd be cool, but we'd have to have new powers created for them. They could be copies of existing powers. That may work, but in some cases there'd have to be new ones made. We also have to have mission design make new story arcs to go along with that. It's a tremendous amount of work for a very little pay. So one of the things that is going to happen in Going Rogue, which I won't talk about too much, is that's kind of resolved. That's all I'll really say.
I still want to see a Jenkins patron.
Me too. Yeah.
I want to see the mission he gives, actually.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and jump in here. I was wanting to talk a little about kind of the process we go through for actually designing a feature. You know, like the epic power sets. That was an example of one feature we did. Didn't work out too well. The tarot power, I worked on that. That was one of my personal favorites. I didn't do the art on that one, but I got to have a lot of fun actually designing the power itself. And also I worked on the power's customization. I worked on a lot of the UI for that. And that was a very long design process. And it followed a very similar pattern. But in any case, a lot of times what we do is, in the case of the tarot power, they came and said, hey, who knows anything about tarot? And I'm like, I know a little. And they said, okay, you're it. And so I said, great. And the idea was they wanted to design a power where it granted you a random buff. No idea how we were going to do this, but it granted you a random buff. And what it ended up doing was we pulled a number of different cards from the major arcana. And initially they said, we want you to do all 20 major arcana. And I said, okay. And so I sat down with a number of tarot books and a couple of tarot decks and sat there at my desk and typed up kind of descriptions of everything and what kind of effects seemed to fit, you know, each of those individual cards. And wrote this up in a long doc and sent it off. And then we had a meeting where they went, okay, we're only gonna use 12 of these. And I said, great, we'll just cut the rest of it. Okay, fine. And so then we went through the process of going, okay, how do you assign a random buff? One of the criteria was, okay, this power, you have to be able to cast on a person, it has to be permanent. We don't have a way of doing a permanent buff in this system. As soon as you die, that buff goes away, or a number of other things can actually strip buffs off as you zone. I think the arena is supposed to do that, which was an interesting bug later. So I spent like a week tinkering with various methodologies and eventually came up with a system where, okay, we can grant a new power where you're granted this specific power that has Chris Bruce attached a specific effect to that, and that's where you see the really cool artwork pop up. And that power stays on you permanently. And it's good for 20 minutes, I believe. And so that we ended up designing it that way, and we finally got a situation that worked for that. And it's like, so once we actually finished working on this power, then came the testing phase where we discovered some interesting things like arena powers, you're supposed to get all the buffs removed. And at that stage it was, okay, that means the initial design we put forward for this thing of granting a temp power doesn't work, because that power is supposed to go away when you enter the arena, but we don't have a way of getting rid of that power. So we ended up going through and redesigning the power so we could actually set up a specific thing within the arenas that says, okay, don't activate this power when you're in an arena. And that itself, I think, took like 3 or 4 days to figure out and actually get implemented as well. And so it's one of those things where the power itself is nice and simple. You pick somebody, you click it, you target them, you click the power, they get a confirmation box, they get a random buff.
That juju happens.
And behind the scenes, there's a whole lot of goofy little stuff that we ended up planning in there. And, you know, getting that thing to work. And I think, did you want to talk about the tower bug at all? Or with the arenas? The tower bug with the arenas, actually? I thought you might want to talk about
that. I don't remember this one off the top of my head, no.
Oh, okay. Yeah. One of the arena bugs we ran into was the tower applying its damage frequently anytime you entered an arena or something like this. And that required another whole level of juju. But
that's what I'm here for.
Yeah. The programming generally, we go, when we finally can't figure something out, we go to programming and go, hey, what's going on here? And they spend some time going through the code and come back and go, you forgot to put this here. And then we fix it.
It's amazing how often that happens.
Yeah.
But, I know nothing about that.
But yeah. And Powers customization followed a very similar process. It was a little more complicated because I'm working, Powers customization was a very Powers light design. In this case, Chris Bruce was working on setting up all of the particle effects for actually tinting. And he was working with a programmer, Michael Chalk. I don't know if he's around, but he was actually setting up all the special tinting effects for this thing and setting up all the tinting and you know, some of the extra effects like changing the geometry or changing the animations and stuff like this. And so they were figuring out behind the scenes how all the code would work and how all the art side of this would work. And so I got stuck on this and they said, okay, we want you to write a design doc that specifies how all these powers are supposed to be used, how you're supposed to pick, you know, what ended up being themes to pick, change colors and stuff like this. And one of the things I ended up doing was designing the preliminary UI, which got thrown out and we redesigned a number of times and ended up coming out pretty nice. And writing up the design doc for that, I think took about 2 weeks, where we had to go through and specify like all the power sets that were going to be used and all the power sets that were going to be used, whether or not we're going to use customizable color palettes, what color palettes would be used, and a lot of things like that. And of course, that one, setting up all the powers, I think I went through and basically adjusted every primary and secondary power set in the game for that one. It took about a week to do, and then like the bug fixing was ongoing for like a month. but beyond that, I'm gonna go ahead and turn it over to Floyd here to talk about how the powers team changed it. And then we're going to turn it over to questions.
So as you can tell, the Powers team has changed a little bit since we had 15 people. Back then, it was basically me and myself, and that was it. Yeah, he didn't do anything. Had to let him go. No, seriously, back when we had 15 people, it was very, very exciting and easy time in one respect and very scary in another. Somebody would say, hey, I want to put this into the game. And we'd look around the room and go, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And we'd put it in. And, you know, sometimes it would be a matter of, you know, a few hours and, you know, we'd have a build up with it already in the game and ready to go. Now we've got, what, 60 people, 70 people? I have no idea how many we have at the company now.
Like 70.
And to actually do something at this point is not quite as easy anymore. Just on the Powers team, we have 4 people. And so just figuring out who's going to do what so they're not stepping on each other's toes or coming to an agreement on how we're going to do things takes a little bit more coordination. And we actually have to sit and have meetings and argue math at one another to figure out how we're going to do something. That's a far cry from just being able to say, okay, done. We've got you know Phil who not only works on powers things but he's also doing rewards things, rewards tables, and trying to help out on the story side a little bit now. And Jonathan is design doc monkey and gets to sit and work out with all of our really big systems that we're working on.
Who knew working at a game company meant working in Word all the time?
And we have Tim, our newest member, who, you know, really has gone through the training process very, very quickly. He came up to speed much faster than I expected, and has been cranking out some pretty good work. So my job has gotten a lot easier in the regard of I don't actually have to sit and do much powers work anymore. Now I spend most of my time answering questions and sitting in meetings and basically, you know, taking a look at the work they're doing and going, dang, that looks cool. I wish I'd done that. And that's really the biggest change is I get to spend a lot more time looking at things and just making sure that they're up to the quality that we like, and less time actually sitting there and trying to figure out where I left the apostrophe off. So.
Okay, so I think we're good. We're going to go ahead and open the floor to questions here. That's what we like to see. Or don't like to see.
Here it comes.
All right. So yeah, start off with your name. And...
Oh, wait. We're out of time, right?
Oh, darn.
All right. Give us who you are and what server you're on.
I'm Battle Wagon. I play on Virtue, Infinity, Liberty, and Guardian. I was just curious as to whatever happened to the power sets and archetypes that were interesting. Introduced or to be introduced in City of Heroes Asia?
Wow. So I don't remember there being any new power sets that were going to be introduced into Asia.
There was the single gun and sword set for one. I can't remember what they
honestly named. I don't know anything about those. They're not in any of our data sets. So it might have been something that they handled completely over there. I'm not familiar with it.
A Marcian Tabe justice and a hell of a lot of forums. As was mentioned a while ago, PvP is supposed to be in some intermediary stage. I asked this before; they told me to ask at the power panel.
Right.
Are there any plans right now to finish that, or do you know what is going to happen when PvP changes? Go.
Okay, so we can't really talk about specifics of what we're going to be doing with PvP. But both Jonathan and Andy spend a lot of time discussing what we're going to do in PvP, and Andy is really our programmer one-man army as far as getting all the changes in. Most of the arena changes that you've seen came from our friend Andy here.
Yeah, I sneak things in when no one's watching.
Sneaky, I like that. I like
so,
that. Or usually comes up and goes, I got this great idea, and we go, wow, that is a great idea. Go.
That said, Andy has a nice large design doc that he's given us that we're looking at, and it may or may not ever see light of day. So.
It is both beautiful and scary, I can tell you
that much.
Good luck, Andy.
Good afternoon, Jay Chaos, Virtue Server. I've got kind of a two-pronged question, one generalized, one kind of specific. The generalized question, do character concept or do power concepts ever influence what's going to go on in the specifics of a character? And the more specific version of that question actually applies to Going Rogue, which you may not be able to answer. Like for the villain epic archetypes, will Lord Recluse let his people go rogue, or will he strip them of their patron powers and will they get new epic archetype powers for that? Or...
Anyone want to handle that?
The second part,
we can't really talk
about that yet, but we figured that out, and it's going to be pretty awesome, I think.
Of course it's going to be awesome.
Sorry.
Yeah, if you're a Veet and you try to go rogue, you just get shot in the back of the head. Sorry.
Only one way out of this army.
As for the first question, you're asking how much do character concepts influence the...
Well, another example for, say, the Keldean storyline starts with several Keldeans defecting to go after the Warshades. Would they have gained, say, Nyctis powers in that way, or would they have just retained their own powers no matter what?
I see what you're asking. No, we really can't talk about that. Sorry.
Gotcha, okay.
Hi, I'm the legendary J-Man from Freedom. Awesome. One of the things
why
I really like.
Why aren't you in your costume?
Because it's very heavy and hot, and it's awesome. One of the things I liked about City of Heroes is how you broke up the intangible things into nine powers, things like involve, willpower, stuff like that. And you talked about what you went into putting together the tangible dual pistols. What kind of design goes into an intangible to break that up into nine powers?
When you mean intangible, you mean...
Well, like willpower is not willpower. Invulnerability, right. But you guys were able to break it up into nine, you know, make it feel like invulnerability, make it feel like you have willpower.
I think that's a good Floyd question.
So how do you come up with nine powers out of something as simple as a one-word description?
Yes.
Basically?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll go with the power set that shall never be see light of day, growth.
Right.
So you have growth powers. and our engine can't support it, sorry. If you had growth, what nine powers would you have? Well, you'd have, a bulk up power. So you can get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, a little bit tougher, but you'd still be able to fit into the caves, right? And then you'd have a tier nine, which would be the, humongous power, where you're, 40 feet tall, but can only be used outdoors and that sort of thing. And basically you try to, break it up into small steps of what sorts of situations you'd want to use the power and try to work out something like that. We also have certain key things that need to be put into a power set. For a tanker power set, you pretty much need some sort of a taunt aura. You need some sort of status protection power. You need either resistance or defense power, or some combination of both. So in a lot of ways, the formula of what we're doing informs how the power sets are built. And then we kind of try to put as much flavor as we can into it to expand it out into nine powers.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Necromantica, Justice Server. Of the powers and archetypes, which one has been the most challenging to tweak and balance? And second part of the question, is there one out there existing now that you wish you'd had a little more time to spend on?
Yes, anyone?
I'm guessing the Veets, actually, because the design process for the Veets was actually pretty complicated. Phil, didn't you work more on those, though?
What's that?
Yeah. A little more. What he's talking about, the Villainepic archetypes were probably more of the more recent stuff that we've actually worked on that we can comment on. They were pretty tricky because not only are they going to be buffing themselves, but they're also buffing those around them, so they become a force multiplier. And when you get, as some of you probably know, you get a bunch of them together, and wow, you guys are hitting caps all over the place, and it's pretty ridiculous. So during beta, there was a lot of adjustment of each individual power to make sure it was useful when they're alone, but also useful when they're in a group, and I think that's a pretty good example of when that gets really tricky. I don't know if there's any archetype I think that is particularly maligned because it's...
Well, right now, the archetype that I'm looking at the most as far as, doesn't need any sort of assistance or help or rebalance or anything are defenders. Defenders have been sort of the status quo for, the length of the program since we came out. They've been sort of the even keel, which we based everything else around. And to a large degree, the game has changed enough that they're a little dated at this point. I don't think that they're really in dire need of any sort of assistance, but it's something I've been keeping an eye on.
Thank you.
Okay, so we got time for one more question, it looks like. But please feel free to fill out your feedback forms and give them to the Wrangler there. I believe that's Liz. We'll be around. So if you do have other questions, feel free to come up and ask us. We're happy to talk about it.
Hi, Palindrome from Victory Server. I was wondering about the stone tank and how that might be altered in the future. If you can also talk about any kind of plans for respeccing about being able to reselect your primary and secondary sets. There's any plans for that?
I can tell you that there are no plans for respeccing primary and secondaries. There's a ton of concerns that would immediately raise being able to do that. For example, if there are some builds that are easier to solo with, but there's an ideal team build or really good once you get to tier 9, so players could very easily level up using a power leveling build and switch over to a more solid build that's more solid at high end. It's a gameplay we don't want. And it also, from a story point, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're a guy who's made out of rock, and all of a sudden, now you're invincible. Now you're an invulnerable guy, and now he's got an axe. I mean, it's just, yeah, there's a whole bunch of problems with that. There's a bunch of scary things that could very easily crop up that don't
work. Yeah. The simple answer to that is that we probably won't ever allow that. As far as redesigning or rebalancing the stone armor power set, it's something that's come across, that we've come across a number of times. Before you get to granite armor, everything's a little bit too weak, and then you get to granite armor and you pretty much don't need anything else. So there definitely is room for change there. The scary part is that a lot of players are very enamored of how stone armor plays now, and we don't really want to rock that boat too much. We would like to take some time to kind of rebalance and smooth everything out, but it just hasn't really, we haven't really come up with a solid plan for it yet, and until we do it, it won't happen.
And the other bit to add on to that is, any ideal fix to the power set, and I put fix in quotation marks, would involve significantly changing powers, and doing that, that's going to upset a lot of people. So we have to be really careful about, it's a really delicate thing. So any changes we do make to the power set has to be taken in, like, how are players going to react? Is it worth that change? If it's not, then probably.
Thank you. Yeah. Don't nerf granite.
What power? I don't recall that power.
You did ask for it, after all. So you earned.
Thank everyone for coming.
Yeah, thank you all.